Well, good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable, and it's very nice to have you for this Friday morning. First, great big thanks to Ray Graff. I was away for a couple days, had some personal stuff going on, but I really appreciate Ray filling in. Very nice. He did a magnificent job, and it's always a pleasure to be able to go away and know that Ray is in the seat and doing so well. So thanks to him. Now, let me thank everybody. So I'm back and in a really good mood. So let's talk to everybody about the debate last night and what happened. And it was so much fun. 3 hours. Oh, weren't at the end, weren't you like, oh, I wish there was another hour? No?
Okay. Encore.
Maybe that's just me. WAMC's Alan Shark Talk is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
Hey, Joe. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Well, great to be back. Thank you. Investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good
How
morning.
Are you? Albany County District Attorney David Soares is in the house.
You know, there's small talk, there's real talk, but we have shark talk.
Oh, boy.
Saying.
Oh, boy. Did you work on that?
I just worked on that right now, man. I know it was going to be in his presence.
It's kind of amazing no one ever came up with that in the 7 million years we've been doing this show.
Trust me. People have come up with it and many other parts of it.
Oh, Rosemary, you
can't take a drink in the middle of the
show. I love that the dialogue. I love that your internal dialogue always comes out during these moments.
Let's be clear that it's a diet Pepsi.
Yeah.
Okay, you can't take a drink in the middle of the show.
No,
oh, yeah,
and
that's
then
true.
Alan
that
refers
might be.
To it as the sauce. So either way, you're kind of. Aaron Pasidi is here, Siena College economics professor extraordinaire. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Doing well. Happy to be in his house.
And our good friend, corporate attorney, Rich Honan. Good morning, Rich.
Yay.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine. Good to see you. Good. Always a pleasure when you're here. It's makes for a better
true.
Day.
That's not true.
That's really
you're
not
right,
true.
You're right, Rich. That is
I'm
not true.
I'm thrilled to see you, Rich.
I love having Rich here. I always enjoy
it's because you get lots
Rich here.
Of letters.
All right. So let's go on and talk about what happened last night. There was a debate. It was in Houston, Texas, and the Democrats squared off 10 of the candidates. The big headline going in was this is the first time that both Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden would be on the same stage. And while there weren't really many fireworks between the two of them, there certainly were some fireworks. Julian Castro went after Joe Biden and kind of made a senility joke, I think, is what he was
awful.
Going for. It seemed bad. And then he went back to some prepared stuff that he had later that also made the same point, which seemed unfortunate. They were obviously Joe Biden continued down the path of embracing Barack Obama. And then there seemed to be this debate over between Julian Castro and a couple of others of who had the better Obama vision, which was a little strange. And I don't know about you, but I didn't know that Bernie was going to make it through the whole 3 hours. He had the sore throat, and then I think he was laboring to speak, and then his face would get bright red, and I was worried about him. I was worried that he could actually make it through the full debate. But there were some good moments, and there were some bad moments, and 10 people could get $1,000. So from Andrew Yang. We're all good. Alan, what'd you think?
Well, I think what you just said is a great summary. I think Castro really messed up. Clearly he just wanted to break out, and he saw this as his last chance, and he did what he could. I think Warren is very bright not to engage in personality stuff. And, the same old stuff from Bernie, I wrote the damn bill and all the rest of it. So although my wife disagrees with me, I did not see any great change in the way in which this thing is, the way this thing is coming down.
So the obvious follow-up is what did Rozelle say?
Oh, yeah, that's the obvious follow-up. She loves Warren, loves her, thinks that Biden is old news, whereas I'm a believer that the one thing that is important here is to beat this president. And I think Biden's the guy who can do that.
I'm going to take a drink. Rosemary, go ahead.
While you're glugging. I think Biden and Bernie looked really old and tired. I'm the big ageist on this. I don't think we should have. I think Trump is too old to be president, too. And on the other hand, though, Castro's thing was crude. And he was wrong, too. ABC went back and looked at the transcript. And Biden did not misstate. In 1 minute, what he had said differently the minute before. He was out and out wrong. That could not have been worse. It did look very desperate. I will vote for anyone who's running against Trump. So I'm not a good measure here. But I really like Warren. On the other hand, many other people last night looked really good. Buttigieg continues to be reasonable, sensible. I like him very much. I wish he were older and more experienced. I hope he's VP. Kamala Harris, I think she's got too. She's too prepared. She has these little speeches, and I liked her much more in the past than I do right now.
Just be careful there, man, because
is she your girl?
I'm just saying, man. She's my lady.
I would vote for her, and I get it. She's beautiful and poised, but she's
a little too much bass in your voice the way you talk about my girl. You know what I'm saying?
Do you like her better now, or did you like her better before?
I liked her better before.
Is it the prosecutor thing?
That seems to... No, seriously. That seems to me people seem to like her better than they like her after seeing her perform a few times.
Yeah, she's a performer.
I've always been a fan, but I think that she's just done so well for herself over the course of the last several debates. And I think... I just think it's really tough for her in particular, given the various challenges that she's experiencing to... actually make a carve out a space for herself.
Are you talking in code, David?
No, I'm not talking in code. I mean, I think, listen, you know what I saw yesterday, and I think we should get back to Rosemary, because I interrupted you, and I don't want you to cut me.
I do want to hear what you all say, but it's like watching a movie. You want to see how your opinions clash or agree with everyone else. Beto O'Rourke, I think, is out of it, but I loved, even while I knew he was probably putting himself not only out of this race, but out of a race for the Senate in Texas, when he went off passionately about gun control, that's politically incorrect, and it was from the heart. I love that part. I think that was probably my favorite moment in the whole debate. While he was
Do you think that's politically incorrect?
Yeah, I do.
Everybody in Congress is backing away from assault weapons.
But given that those events that he was talking about took place in his home state, and if he were to run for Senate in Texas, how could that be?
Because Texas is a big Second Amendment.
That's not politically incorrect. That's just politically miscalculated, I think.
Okay, whatever.
I think it was absolutely calculated.
I agree with Rich.
I think he was waiting for the chance to say that.
He's never going to go anywhere with that.
I'm telling you right now, he has his finger on the pulse of what America is thinking. I don't think Americans are prepared to turn over and hand over their handguns. I do believe that we have had enough of these assault weapons. And I think he's perhaps the first to begin saying it as loudly as some.
It is interesting, David, that it's the presidential candidates who are leading the discussion on gun control far more than congressional Democrats or Republicans. And we saw that last night. So that was interesting. And then two other candidates, Amy Klobuchar and Cory Booker. I love them. They're sound. They're reasonable. But they're so quiet. I just can't see how they're going to get their claws into this race. And they're so reasonable. I'm glad they're in the Senate. I hope they stay there. I would vote for them in a minute if they were running for president.
The thing I saw was that I think one of the big reasons for Trump's election was that he came across as relatable to the average American. I don't see that in any of the people that were on stage last night. They don't present themselves as... I mean, I know they're debating healthcare policy. I know they're debating gun control policy. These are really important issues, but the way they present it is not something that's really going to resonate with a country that has this newfound populist streak, and Trump took advantage of it, and he knew how to play it, and the Democrats are just going back to their old playbook of getting down to the weeds of what Medicare for All looks like and this and that and the other thing. It's a nerd fight, exactly. I mean, it sounds, it's like 10 professors on stage debating these things. And
don't you think there's a large part of the populace that wants a professor, though, that wants somebody who, knows something?
No, I don't. That's why we elected Trump.
But the premise
Bush.
Of your the
and
premise
Bush. George W. before that, but, the guy you go but, drink beer with.
I mean, that was Clinton's advantage. He like Alan. You know, people say that Clinton made you feel like the most important person in the room when he was talking.
But whose butt,
and you don't
that?
See that with any of these candidates.
That's Alan's
I'm sorry.
Butt.
Alan, go ahead with your butt.
Okay, but here's the deal. Trump may have had his finger on the pulse in the beginning when he ran. But that pulse has changed substantially. I think people are sick to death of this guy. I don't think they like him anymore. And I don't think that we have to compete or that others have to compete with him based on the kind of garbage that he has handed out since he's become president.
Well, I think that's a losing strategy for Democrats, Alan.
David?
Well, we disagree.
Okay, that's fine.
Well, you're wrong and I'm right.
So... That's, we disagree.
Hey, Joe, can you pass me that sauce?
Yeah.
I hear that all the time at home. Alan, I'm just going to ask you. I'm just going to ask you this because I thought about this all throughout the debate. In fact, throughout the debate season, I think the product that we ultimately consume, and yesterday the consumption was 3 hours, is born out of a format that I believe is seriously flawed. When you have to put 10 plus people on one stage, and you're giving them a finite period of time to communicate. And we know that they not only have to communicate to the audience that is in front of them now, but an overall audience that is watching them via television, but they also have to communicate through a social media audience, right? I think they start to, the experts who work with these candidates begin to craft and engage in such stagecraft to get them to make sure that all of the various people and medias that they're directing their remarks to are met. I think that this format brings about the result that we're seeing. I do disagree that there are some of the candidates that I believe, really can relate. I think Mayor Pete, he is certainly one of the brightest, and he's just one of really, he's a real star. He's incredibly, he's very bright. But I also think that he communicates in a way that is not above anybody and that is aspirational.
Relatable,
much like the way that Barack Obama did. Yep. I also think that what Mayor Pete is doing is the thing that we loved about Barack. Is we knew that this dude, when he walked in the room, that he was going to really speak at a level where you just have to follow and pay attention because he's brilliant. But we always waited for those moments where he did something relatable, whether it's dropping a mic or a certain look or doing something that...
Wearing a tan suit.
It's like reminding us that, oh, that's my man right there, you know? So I believe that there are certain people that are delivering on that. But what I saw last night is this: I saw one nominee that will become president of the United States. But I also saw an amazing cabinet.
Because
people who are not going to be there at the end, they have something to offer this country in some way. Whether it's environmental, whether it's economic, I saw an amazing cabinet
there. I'm not saying these candidates can't be relatable. It's just that they're not demonstrating that yet, and maybe they're saving that for the campaign trail. But I don't know. It was just weird.
Rich,
to see.
I want to take the cork out of the bottle.
No, I think if they're waiting to be relatable, I think they're waiting too long, right? I mean, isn't that this is the to David's point? Yeah, they are. They are forced into a format that is kind of counter-intellectual, right? I mean, you don't really have the chance to anti-intellectual, counter. It's just, you don't have the chance to really get into the weeds. And you're right, it's important to demonstrate that you can get into the weeds if you need to. And that was a huge strength of Bill Clinton, was he was a relatable guy, but he was a policy wonk, to the core. I think the whole thing sets up so well for Biden, and I think despite whatever everybody's been saying, he's been pretty sticky, right? I mean, he came out in the lead, and he's always been in the lead, and there's been some ups and downs, and some people, Warren's been taking stuff away from Bernie, but not really much other movement. And I think first of all, Biden ends up being the alleged moderate, you know, because in a left, in what I think is obviously what I think, but what others might think is a left wing group. And so he, who, you know, we think is a stone lefty, he ends up being the moderate of the group. So that sets up well for him. And the other thing is, he's the one thing about it, he's always been a personally affable, likable guy. He's got the great light. You can't say anything about his life story. Yeah, he's made some mistakes. He had the plagiarism stuff and all that. But about, you know, the tragedies he's been through in his life. And the other thing is, if you're a Democrat, it's really hard to criticize him because then you're just criticizing Saint Barack. You know, and then, you know, what do you do with that?
And that's what they were trying to do last night.
They were nibbling around the edges. Yeah. And that's tough.
We just have to pause because we have a break. And then when we come back, we have another hour. We can talk more about this, I promise. And we'll do exactly that.
Drinking breaks. There's no time to talk here.
We welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Friday morning, Friday the 13th. And we welcome you.
I forgot about that till I was coming in. That makes me a little nervous.
Oh, you're all right.
Do you have triskaidekaphobia?
No, I try to fight it, but still, you hear those words, Friday the 13th, and I'm seeing Jason with the baseball bat. And
he had it.
Baseball bat would be less. Yeah.
I think baseball bats appear in Oz, not Friday the 13th.
Rosemary, you and I can go on for a long time about how that movie really helped to orient me and like my thoughts about other people. Cause
that's why you're a prosecutor now.
I mean, I'm just like I ain't going camping.
I hate camping. It isn't just the guys with the axes, the bugs, the dirt.
Oh. Yeah, but you hear crickets. I hear kill, kill, kill. I ain't going. Stay home.
All right. Well, I will say that we got a ton of letters here, so let me get to as many as we can here as we continue to talk about the debate last night. Russ says, the Democratic presidential candidates have debated themselves into a terrible tangle until their policy prescriptions seem to come from the land of broken toys. In the end, the primary voters will bring the least scary option to the fore, probably several primaries in, and the campaign will get started. So far, there is no middle ground to build a national consensus.
Russ, you think the primary voters are going to bring us the... Okay.
Well, you know, I kept saying, well, I can't make a decision. I'll just vote for anybody who's not Trump, even Pence.
But
after last night, when there was really nothing very clarifying about Biden versus Warren or Warren versus Bernie, I'm thinking, yeah, it really is. Iowa is going to be way important this year. That's going to be how the field narrows.
Traditional politics, Democrats, you know, go as far left as they can and then make their way back to the center. Mm-hmm. Republicans go as far right as they can and make their way back to the center. What we haven't seen in the last election is going all the way to the right and staying there, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, part of the challenge here is how do you have a 10 people in a field and you have a primary without going so far left that you're not alienating like the independent voter, right? Because you've got to moderate. So how do you prevent yourself from going so far out? I think the only person that's going to be able to do that, to be quite honest with you, is Uncle Joe.
Yeah, that's what Alan has been saying for a long time.
Yeah, but don't independents... I give independents more credit. I give all voters, I think, more credit than that. I think everybody knows that in your respective primary, you go to one end. And that everybody says, all right, they said what they needed to say. You know, now they're in. Now let's find out what their real positions are. I think the voters are a little more forgiving. They'll start listening to people after the primary, you know, and see, okay, now how far to the middle are they really going to move?
I just think that in a primary right now, we can agree that people that had voted for both Donald Trump and voted for Barack Obama, we can agree that they're in a place you could get them, right? The problem is going to be if you're so far left on one issue that you can't moderate and you're alienating those people because, man, I just can't get with this whole, universal health care right. issue.
Or too far right. It works that way, too. I mean, yeah. if you're a one-issue voter, abortion or Second Amendment,
right.
then there's nothing anybody can say that's going to change you. You're going to pick the person who's strongest in that area.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think those people are not even in,
they're not even in
the
contention.
Mix.
Yeah, but the problem is there's more. It used to be, like, the two things you just named. Those used to be yeah. the only issues,
but now
there's a million exactly. such issues where I'm a one issue person, yeah. and it's yeah. universal health care or exactly. something like that.
Exactly.
The mom in the suburb may really be offended by the immigration policy, but she's not really interested in the tax plan that
right.
you have, right?
Right?
So where does that person, you know, how do you get that person? How do you go not so far left that you alienate that individual?
So I disagree with something you said, Rich, that I give credit to the American voters. I think something really awful happened in 2016 that we continue to see
39 minutes in, I thought it was going to happen a lot sooner.
What,
Joe, let me give you that $5, bro.
I think, you know, they're so angry and upset and wanted to make an expression of that frustration. And so they put into place a man who really does not represent them. They were fooled by that. And the polls show that they continue to be. So I'm not so sure that reasoning, oh, they're far to the left or right now because they have to win a primary, but they'll be different. And I don't think they are thinking that way. I think it's very guttural and in their guts, and maybe the right idea is to do what Beto did, to just speak from the heart and be damned with whether how it'll play politically.
But I think that's what Bernie's doing, too. I mean, he's held these positions for a long time. I know, but I'm saying I think he's speaking from the heart in terms of what he thinks is
important issues. And he did very well with that strategy, did he not?
Yeah.
I have to tell you, his delivery alienates people.
Yeah, it does.
It's like, dude, please, don't yell at me anymore.
It's a lot of yelling.
He also, the television commentators were bringing this up yesterday. He's very silent on gun control, and I forgot that he voted many times against the Brady Amendment.
From Vermont.
But so is Kirsten Gillibrand, who's from upstate New York. She modified and changed and managed to mostly avoid the idea of flip-flop.
Well, yes, evolved.
Has evolved. But he's not, he's just quiet. On
he's it. A little bit of a victim of his own, right? He had kind of a really cool platform last time, and everybody has picked up his platform and kind of modernized it, and you know,
which is a success.
It
should make him happy, but he
doesn't
wants
appear.
More.
He doesn't appear happy, and that's what
not.
I was. I agree with you, Rich. I mean, everything that just about everyone on that stage is saying is like right off the Bernie book, except Bernie didn't reinvent himself this time around. So people are listening to what Bernie's saying. And perhaps enjoying the way that it's being presented a little more than the way that Bernie did.
All right. Alan writes, there was a lot of passion and personality last night, but only Warren came out and said, that's all good and all, but the real problem is the corruption in Congress.
Yeah.
Elaine says, sorry, Joe, I'm a dog fancier in the lingo. Joe just doesn't show well. His inarticulateness increased as the debate went on, and I just can't see him debating Trump. I'm not blaming age. It's just who he is.
Trump will eat him alive.
On the other hand,
just like eating Clinton.
Love the tone of the debate overall and the passion I saw from many of the debaters, Bernie, Cory, Beto, Kamala.
Yeah.
Some of these folks will make a great cabinet for Warren's presidency.
Let me just get back to the whole Biden fumbling issue, okay? First of all, I happen to think that the person who set the highest bar on projection, on articulation, was number 44 for me in my lifetime, the president who set the highest bar. The person who has set the floor is the current president, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think you can get below where this guy is unless you just show up and just start stammering, right? So I'm not worried about Biden in that way. Here's what I am worried about Biden, though. The self-inflicted damage, right? This person, it's like apologize already, move on, and just get beyond it. The other thing that I notice about Joe Biden is when Joe Biden gets heated and he gets passionate, he can't speak.
But
that's just like me.
That's
just like me, which I had to figure out how to, properly convey a message even when I'm angry.
Take a deep breath.
I have to take a deep breath, and I just have to say it with a certain cadence and a certain pace. The mistake I see him making, and I'm shocked that his people don't sit down with this man, is, hey, listen, you can't get you can't get flustered. You stay at a tone that your mind and your mouth connect to his
staff. You know, I think Alan is right that the debate last night is not going to move the needle in any of the polls. But I think Biden might have gotten sympathy votes once when he was attacked by Castro. That was that was just awful.
Which I thought Buttigieg really helped him.
Yeah, he did. And then the second time with the protesters, they were yelling. I couldn't understand it. I had to read it later. They were yelling, "We're DACA, save our lives." But they're yelling it just as Biden is about to tell the story of his wife and child dying in a car crash and his son dying of cancer. And he was the Obama administration, which actually did try to help DACA people. I didn't get that at all.
I cringe. And yesterday I was cringing with some of the closing statements, you know, where people were just, look, identity politics is reality. But I think that in the closing statements, people were just really going down there. Down the identity politics trail.
Yeah.
You know, Kamala, you know, this is my lady, right? But I wasn't really a fan of what she had to say as a closing statement, nor was I a fan of what Mayor Pete had to say. I wasn't even a fan of what Uncle Joe had to say.
Yeah.
Right? From the very beginning, when we started talking about this particular presidency, what I said was, if we don't speak, we as Democrats, if we are not speaking into the hearts of people and understanding where people are right now, you know, with respect to security, with respect to employment, with respect to their future, with their children's future, then we're going to lose this. And I will say that the most disappointing aspect of this entire campaign season and watching all of these people debate is, yes, if I'm taking an exam on health care, then please, Professor Warren, talk to me,
right?
But you know what I want to hear? I want to hear stories about people who are suffering and what you're going to do to help those people.
And that's the relatability issue I was talking about, is that these issues are good. I'm happy they're on the table. I'm happy they're being discussed. It's the way in which they are presented is not really going to resonate. Now, maybe when there's a clear front runner, the message gets revised and reworked so that it becomes more relatable, like, you know, individual stories. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's, you know, I don't know, it's just tough to get behind any of them when they present it like that. And even though I agree with a lot of the policies,
Alan?
Hello. Hello. I just wanted to ask a question. The polls are all showing consistently that Biden is in the lead. If you listen to this program, if you listen to many of the people who write in, Biden is, you know, old goods, you know, the rest of it. How come the country is behind Biden, poll-wise, by a lot?
Two words, yes. Dr. Chartok.
You may call me doctor.
A doctor. He's familiar. And right now, what we want more than anything is someone familiar.
We
took a chance on this guy who was going to clean the swamp and drain the swamp, and people took a chance on this guy. And where we have wound up is a place so far we could not have foreseen the dismantling of our international and foreign policy. We could not have seen a dismantling of our economy, right?
All true.
People want something familiar. And the closest thing that they recall is the last presidency.
Alan, let me turn the question back on you as political scientist and ask you, why do you think it's the case?
I think that what the district attorney had to say is correct. I think this guy is comfortable. He represents a time when this country was in better shape than it is now, that it didn't have a madman running things. They also like this guy. They like him. They relate to him. They relate to the fact that he's lost a wife and he's lost a kid and that he is like them. I take great exception to those people who think that there's nothing there, because there's a great deal there.
I think there's nothing there, and I think that his appeal right now is based on electability, especially the black vote, which makes no sense that they're for him and not some of the other very attractive candidates.
Oh, you'll be the decider.
Let me get it out before you attack.
I'll tell you something. You attack Kamala today. Now you attack my Uncle Joe.
Uncle Joe is there because people think that he's the one who can beat Trump. If he goes on to the first primary and loses badly, that disappears, and you're going to see massive shifts in the polls.
And
you will not see it until then. If he does well in the early primaries, then they're going to say, "Oh, he's the one who."
And Rosemary, the reason why people of color really love Uncle Joe is because the person that people of color really love trusted Uncle Joe. That's transferable.
Sure. I'm sorry. That's not I, that possibly is
that's,
true. But I
that's
think
why
Joy
John Travolta.
Reed
that's why we love
this.
John Travolta. He danced.
He danced.
I'm saying. I'm just. I'm
sorry. I like him for president.
The relatability. You know.
I don't love John Travolta.
You don't.
There's an
African. Okay,
not
a really?
Color.
Not from Saturday Night Fever.
Brothers respected John Travolta. Man.
Rosemary. Rosemary, there's an African American man telling you what his community may happen to think.
Well,
and you're saying no. And wait,
okay.
I'm not done yet. For goodness sakes, let me just finish this one thought and then I'll shut up again. And that is that he is going to lose in New Hampshire. I'll bet you anything. You say if he loses the first one, you'll see what happens. I think he will. I think he'll win big in South Carolina for all of the reasons we're talking about. Pardon me, right now. So I just think you know, the African American population knows what they're talking about and are with him.
Warren should win New Hampshire. That's her home. That's her backyard. You know, so I don't think that's going to be
and Bernie's.
But I think what Warren's done is she's taken Bernie's act and she's basically made it better. So I think that when it comes to Bernie versus Warren in New Hampshire, I think Warren takes it. So I don't think it should come as a big surprise that Warren beats Biden in New Hampshire. I mean,
Is Kamala Harris definitely somebody's VP?
I think, you know.
Definitely is a strong word, but is she probably the VP?
I think she's probably the VP, if not the person on top of the ticket.
She's not acting. She's acting like somebody trying not to be too offensive. You know, she's not acting like she is really going for the top of the ticket right now.
What I saw yesterday was a very strategic effort to remind the American people who truly is the problem here, and it wasn't the other people who were standing on stage. And I think that what happened the last time that they debated, with all of the criticism that people, you know, experienced as a result of going after Biden, I think that her strategy was, I'm not going to go after anybody. I'm going to demonstrate leadership and unity, but keep the focus on the president of the United States. And I also happen to think that she was trying to bait him so that he attacks her today, and therefore we'd be talking about him attacking her and elevating her profile.
All right, I have to take a break before the top of the hour because otherwise we don't have another break before the top of the hour. So does that make sense?
I think you just want to drink.
It's kind of tautologic.
It's a drink.
Yes.
Drink break.
And then we have a ton of letters, so I want to get to those as well. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, David Soares, Rich Honan, Aaron Pasitti, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We have a ton. Let me get to as many as we can before the top of the hour. Lisa writes, Bernie was terrible. Warren can not pay for her health plan and will not take my private insurance. Joe was okay. Castro, O'Rourke, Bullock, Booker should go home and run for the Senate. If Trump, God forbid, wins again, we'll need a Democratic Senate. I can't stress this enough.
Agreed.
Jonathan says, dear panel, could you envision a Warren-Stacey Abrams ticket, or would two women be too much for the purple states?
Even this is one the woman.
Stacey Abrams?
This
I mean,
is the
come
part.
On. Like, where does that come from?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a bad letter. I'm saying, why is she? And she's been in the discussion for a while. Yeah. Like, why?
The culture of celebrity.
Yeah.
Like, when are we going to realize? Like, right now, we need people who actually know how to operate the ship.
You would take Stacey Abrams. And look, I'm on the other side. You would take Stacey Abrams over Kamala Harris?
Absolutely not.
No. I'm not dogging the letter. I'm just saying you're right. It's weird that she's even involved in a discussion.
All right, get ready for this letter. Jim says, the fact that Bernie was on stage not feeling well shows how much grit he has, especially at his age and doing it all these years. How many of us would have just said forget it?
Maybe it showed how much grits he ate.
Maybe he should just say forget it.
Jim.
Oh, that was very snarky.
No, and pass his support on whether it's Warren or whether it's that's what's coming.
That's
right?
An interesting
that's
issue.
Why he's trying to stay in.
That the far left of the Democratic Party is splitting the votes between Bernie and Warren, and that you could somehow combine them, and that could for progressive Democrats like myself.
I think that's his hope.
Form a.
A block
against the more moderate Biden.
I think Bernie.
Ain't gonna happen.
It's unfair to say about a guy who's like second, but yeah. I think he's gonna hang in until he can use some power and be a kingmaker or something.
I mean, look what his platform in 2016 did to the 2020 debates. All of the issues he brought up 4 years ago are now being discussed. That's remarkable. A remarkable accomplishment coming from a neoliberal Democratic Party for the past 40 years.
And maybe they wouldn't be discussed if this country didn't elect a person who was so outrageous.
True.
You know, which makes his platform in 2016 all that much more relevant today.
Eric is afraid the Dems are doing it again. Biden did not seem very sharp at all last night, and I don't think he's the best candidate by any means. I fear the Democratic Party is making the mistake of anointing him like they did Hillary. Warren, Buttigieg, Booker, Harris, all come off as much more viable, in my opinion. Tamara says, who can beat Trump? I like Buttigieg for his relatability and how reasonable he comes across. I like Biden because I know he'll build on Obama's legacy. But the question is, if either of these two are up against Trump's brash, shameless reality-like energy, can they stand out? Can they beat Trump when this country is such a sucker for the audacious?
I think what we've seen in our domestic politics over the course of the last 12 years is what happens when you are the president. You may have one house and not the other. You have everything that's brought to a grinding halt.
I wish they had asked that
exactly.
question.
Exactly.
No one asked, what do you do if you're president and you have a Republican Senate? Then what are you going to do about health care?
Exactly.
That would have been a good question to ask.
You know, everybody's laughing at Andrew Yang about the money. I'm like, that policy, it has as much chance of surviving as the health care policy from Warren. I mean, it doesn't matter what you propose right now. And you could say and pour honey in my ear all you want. The reality is what are you going to be able to do when you get to Washington, D.C.?
I'm not familiar with that phrase. Is that a thing?
Pour honey in my ear? Oh, yeah. It's, just say upbringing? Something sweet. Say something sweet.
All right. Okay, I got it now. I know that James says, I know that Fightin' Joe seems the most likely candidate to clinch the Democratic candidacy. However, I truly feel the Democratic voters are tired of the same old, same old. If Joe Biden gets the nomination, yes, I'll vote for him, and I'm sure many Dems will as well. However, getting Joe Biden for our candidate in 2020 is like a Hillary redo of 2016. We're tired of the old guard bureaucrats. We want real change from politicians who will move us forward.
Agreed. I don't think that's fair. I really don't. I think Joe Biden is a lot more genuine in terms of the way he thinks, his position, his character than Hillary, and I think it's a bad comparison.
Well, Nancy says, Biden, really? I can hardly believe that anybody could watch and listen to Joe Biden yesterday and think he's the best choice to go up against Trump. Did you hear his answer about dealing with slavery? Somehow it ended up with getting African-American parents to turn on the record player for their children. He's really out of it. Besides, his legislative record stinks. It's time to hang it up. Thanks, Nancy.
That's a great letter, by the way. That's just a really well-written letter.
I have to tell you that's so unfair to not just Joe Biden, but to every single candidate on that stage. When you're talking about something as complicated, so multi-layered, that about the condition of people of color 400 years ago, as well as people of color today, and to be able to provide a response that is going to be acceptable in 120 characters and come off in a 3-second soundbite, it's ridiculous. Just as ridiculous as the fact that the Democratic Party, when it comes to speaking about people of color or the concerns of people of color, seems like we can only talk about criminal justice reform. We're not talking about employment. We're not talking about greater investments in communities of color. It's just, why don't we just eliminate some some jail time on these issues, we'll decriminalize this. That's all people of color are concerned about in the United States?
David, it's not unfair to ask that. That is the job. The people who are trying to get this job should be able to talk about these issues in an understandable way. And the fact that this guy's been in public service for, 40 years? And he doesn't have a relatable set, defined way of thinking about it. That's exactly why they should ask that question. That's not unfair.
I think that they all have to answer that question. What I'm saying, and I go back to the format, right?
Yeah.
That prohibits a much more thorough discussion of these important issues. Now,
yeah, but that's the way it is.
The dress. Remember the dress last year that you saw? Some people saw a gold dress. Some people saw blue.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when you're watching your candidates, it doesn't matter what people are asking them. If you saw a blue dress before the question was asked, you're seeing a blue dress after that. So if you like Joe going into the debate, right, you like Joe coming out.
I saw a tan suit.
You saw a tan suit?
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many more letters. I think all of the panelists have much more to say on this issue, so we'll get back to that. First, Ray Graff with news right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We've got a lot of letters. We'll get to as many as we possibly can. And I think all of our panelists have a lot to say. I know you have a lot to say. So we'll try to get as much in as we can in the next 20 minutes or so. Alan Chartok, David Soares, Rich Onan, Aaron Pasitti, and Rosemary Armeo making up the panel this morning. We go to Carla, who says, Kamala didn't mention specific victims, yet you said she was too scripted. Victims? All right. Overall, my worry is that we really are a divided country, and we need someone to find some base issues that we can all agree on and build from there. Not an easy job for anyone. Nobody said it was an easy job, right?
Well, also, what's so awful about being a divided country? I mean, I understand we shouldn't be at each other's throats on every issue, but isn't that the whole idea that there's two sides of every issue, and you know we should have debate, you know, big government, small government, spend money,
a difference between divided and polarized.
Okay, I don't think divided in and of itself is bad.
But
polarized
what we are now
is difficult.
Everything is politicized. Issues like weather.
I have a problem
and immigration
with divided.
Should not be a matter of Democrat or Republican, and that's where we're at.
Here's my issue. Here's my issue with divided. Right. I grew up at a time when, especially in New England, you know, Republicans, they were concerned with certain issues. Democrats were concerned with certain issues. There was never a question as to whether or not you're an American, right, whether you should be treated with respect.
Back where you came from.
Right?
Yeah.
And right now, if you don't agree with me on an issue, you are the enemy, and I can't stand you, and I will show up and fight with you because that's the country. That's the divided country that we're at right now.
I think that's a smaller minority than you think.
I think
it gets a lot of ink.
No,
but I think most people, look, you know, we had September 11th this week. I think most people were pretty respectful. Most people were thinking about America, and most people felt like, yeah, you know, we are one country. Yes, there's always going to be the 2% on either side. Yeah, I get that.
I disagree with you just to the extent that I believe today what we have are more means to communicate our disagreements and hatred and vitriol.
That's true.
You know?
That is true.
And so I think that that's led to more of a toxic environment where people don't even talk if they disagree. That one of the reasons I really enjoy you and I enjoy being on this, you know, particular station with you is because you educate me, because you provide a perspective that I don't share. But in our discussions, you're educating me about how you arrived at your perspective, which I always find to be valuable.
And so having a divided country is fine in terms of how you approach common goals. And right now, the country is divided where we're not even pursuing common goals.
That's
Trump is trying to take health care away from people. So if you can agree on a common goal that people should have access to affordable health care, then you can have a divisive debate about how you accomplish that, mm-hmm, whether it's vouchers on the right or single payer on the left. That's fine. But that's not the debate. They're trying to dismantle Obamacare, and for the first time since 2012, the number of uninsured people in the U.S. has gone up.
Right.
That's not pursuing a common goal. So that's
well, I
division over whether or not you're debating totally separate policies.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. For example, that if you had some Republican elected official, that they wouldn't say, "Yeah, we're in favor of affordable health care. We just think there's different ways of achieving it." And I still think
like, what are they?
Well, the same thing. You know, everybody's been working on that, right? I mean, we haven't achieved it yet.
There's
Obamacare
no evidence.
Didn't achieve it.
There's no evidence.
But Obamacare was a step, and there's other steps. But you know,
we're eager to see what they are. We've been waiting now. How many years?
But, you know, healthcare, Rosemary, you and I have said this before. Mm-hmm. Healthcare is one of those ones, even if you called an absolute drop-dead political timeout and everybody could say whatever they wanted to say without fear of what their constituency would hear, it would still be really hard to solve. It's a really hard problem.
It's a very, very big, giant problem.
Yeah. But I would like to remind everyone that we've gotten to this place as a country, as one of the most respected nations on planet Earth, as one of the most powerful nations on planet Earth, because we've always embraced the impossible. And together, we have achieved amazing things. Our highway systems, right? Technology. We've been at the forefront of every single thing because of our collective aspiration. And
we continue to be.
But I don't believe that that's the case now.
Okay.
But there was a unifying event that preceded the expansion of higher education opportunities, the interstate highway system, R&D in all different aspects, and that was World War II and the subsequent Cold War.
Yeah.
Those were unifying events. We don't have those now.
Actually, Eisenhower came up with the idea of the national highway system way before that, when he actually tried to take a group from across the country, and I think they gave up after like 3 months or something like that. They actually could not get an army across the country.
Eisenhower was a Republican.
We're having the same discussion that's going on in the national level, that we're so great, we've had all these great innovations in the past, we'll continue to go on. We're not acting that way. And I began to say, yes, healthcare is a huge and difficult problem. It's been solved by other industrialized giant countries in this world. We don't have to invent something new. We have to adapt things that have worked elsewhere. The economist is agreeing. It hasn't been solved
in the way that Americans would. Americans would not. I'm going to say this. I don't think Americans would put up with the healthcare system, say, of England or Germany or Sweden or Norway. And I understand that there's large participation, but you know, Americans just have different, you know, desires and needs.
And we could work it out if we didn't have the kind of polarized discussion that we have had since the Clinton years.
I agree that has been a huge obstruction, but I think it's a hard issue no matter how you slice it.
All right. Let me get back to more letters. Jim, on the gun debate, of all the statements I read this morning, there was one by activists who said, 6 people die from vaping and bingo, Trump does something. Thousands die from guns and nothing.
Yes, I've had that thought too. I think it's great that they're jumping on that vaping thing. It's very dangerous. My own son has stopped because of it, and I'm happy about it. But yes, how come gun control is not a big mad firm? We know the answer to that.
So Jim goes on to say, my issue with the Democrats is they don't talk like that to the American people. They are, for lack of a better phrase, boring.
Unrelatable.
Alan, do you think they're boring?
First of all, I did say that thing about the guns and the guns yesterday because good. I think it's exactly right. You know, he gets on to vaping, and then at the same time, he's 100% gung ho for guns, which kill so many more people in this, you know, in this country. And do I think that they're boring? I don't know. We've had a couple of letters about who we haven't talked about today, like Klobuchar, for example, who I thought did a terrific job yesterday. But it's as if the great Oz has decided Klobuchar is out. You know, Booker is out. And Bernie is out, believe it or not. Bernie is out. Warren is in, but Bernie is out. Somehow, it's interesting to watch what the mass media in its entirety is able to put into the before the American people.
Yeah, and the mass media takes absolutely no responsibility for Donald Trump and the amount of free airtime that they provided to this guy.
Oh, we
his
do
buffoonery.
So take credit. We've been doing mea culpas about that since 2016.
But they're still doing it.
Yeah, that's not true.
Yeah, but if
they have not come up with the formula to cover a president who outright lies and demands attention for foolish stuff. We have not fixed
I'm saying,
it,
the, you're serious. The fourth estate that's been around forever hasn't figured out how to cover
right,
a
so
liar?
We have never had a guy
Yeah, but
like
the current
this.
Fourth estate has really only been around since mid-2000, when you think about it, like the
cable news.
Well, I was going to say, no, you know, kind of the idea of, you know, agendas, narratives, analysis, as opposed to, you know, what I would call kind of pure journalism.
Yeah. But the fourth,
that started in the '60s. It was advertising
okay,
rather than cable TV.
Okay.
But the fourth estate has called him out for a liar. They've said over and over again, he's a liar. They've counted up all of the lies, 10,000 lies. But you know what? It doesn't seem to matter.
But here's my point. The man used a Sharpie, and Sweet Home Alabama was going to get taken down by Dorian, right?
Right.
We
right.
knew that was a lie. Why cover it every day? The day that we figured out, look, you lied about it, you messed up, you used wrong information, you're wrong.
He's the president.
You saw why from the reporting that came out. We didn't know on the first day that he had directed Wilbur Ross to fire the guy. We did not know that he was using his. That story developed because of reporting
and
that went deep.
I still want to know about Puerto Rico.
And he's the most powerful man in the world, the president of the United States. And when he says something, it affects the way in which we pay attention. So, in other words, are we paying attention to the fact that people are going to die because he said a lie? I mean, that's going to happen.
Let's go back to the letters. Lars says, agreed with Rosemary, big Bernie fan here, and he's still got great ideas, but I think he missed the boat when he was miffed by the Democratic Party of 2016. Both Biden and Bernie are just acting too old for the job. Biden was speaking in run-on sentences and offered little substance. He seems to be coasting to the finish line, knowing he's the current frontrunner. Time to retire and pass the baton to the next generation. Mayor Pete and Warren were stepping it up, and were making the most sense to me.
Warren ain't no spring chicken either, by the way.
No, 70, right? 70.
Well, we were just talking in the break about how, although she is 70, you would not have thought that less. Like Joe and Bernie looked outmoded, not just old and tired. And she's like a spring of energy. Her ideas are all, you know, progressive, fresh.
So you can be old, but not old.
Absolutely, right?
She projects something that's not old.
These debates provide an opportunity for Biden to lose, but really no opportunity for him to win.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the problem for him and his strategists and all the people that work for him is like, why are you getting wound up? Here are some staple things that you need to say. Just like when you think about Sarah Palin and her debate with Biden, right? What do they do? They mapped out a formula for her to get in there, take up a lot of time in providing explanations, pivot to the things that she's very comfortable with, and get through. And again,
okay, but you keep saying that, David, but that's not the point. The point is this is what we got. So you got to learn to work with what we have.
I understand that. What I'm saying is why is Joe Biden engaging to the point where he gets hot, he becomes inarticulate, and that becomes what we talk about in relationship to Joe
Biden. Well, I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, but they're not that bad. He's playing it beautifully. This is like, you know, when my son used to play soccer, if a team was up like 2-0 or something like that, they would just start kicking the ball, you know, off the field, you know, and, you know, the clock's still running in high school or something like that. And I think that's, you know, as long as he doesn't make some tremendous gaffe, and again, you know, we've set the bar pretty low, right? He can make a lot of mistakes without really getting hurt.
I find it very interesting, Mr. Republican or conservative,
independent.
You can say what you want. I know what I think. You seem to be for Biden. That's interesting.
So, economists like to dump water on fires. So you can talk about what the press says, and you know, pontificate about what the people believe, but there are prediction markets where people are actually betting legitimate money with payouts. And if you look at prediction markets, Warren's at 36% in terms of securing the Democratic nomination. So she is the front runner. Biden's at 23%. So 13 percentage points behind Warren. So, you know, you have, you know, politicians and talking heads saying, oh, Biden's the front runner or whatever.
people who are betting money don't believe that.
But that's the betting public, right? That's not like a that's like at the track where like the odds maker makes the morning line.
What are you gonna bet on the loser?
No, but then it's the public who you know sends a horse up to 17-1, right? It's not necessarily the expert odds maker. There's a difference between the morning line and what the crowd
thinks.
It's different than horse racing.
Is it?
And they're up. And Stumbling Joe.
That's an indicia of what the public thinks, right?
John says Yang won the debate hands down. He was relatable, honest, and gave perfect answers in every issue. The panel. What was the thing about the Asian doctors, though? That was like out of the blue. I thought weird.
He said, "I'm Asian, so I know a lot of doctors."
Okay, but
it was a joke.
It was a joke.
It was fun. He is relatable. Yeah.
The panel seems to be for what?
For like a an IT genius guy.
Yes. The panel seems to be bringing in their preconceived notions about who is worth listening to instead of just focusing on their performances.
That is not true. I don't like Beto O'Rourke at all, and I just said I started off saying how great he did.
Plus,
that's not true.
Plus, it's a competition. I know that in our society we seem to be getting away from competition and winners and losers, but somebody's got to. It's a race. Somebody's got to win, and the people who have 2% are probably not gonna be the next president, or even the next nominee. Right. And that's numbers. That's just the fact. That's not us.
I mean, to your point, I believe it was after the Castro clash, Pete Buttigieg came in and said, well, look, that's not it's not helpful. We shouldn't be bashing each other, and ultimately, Julian Castro said, "Well, this is an election. This is what we have to do."
Well, remember
I don't know.
Do you remember the last time somebody stepped in and said, all they're going to remember is this rat-a-tat? Remember that one, Rosemary?
Mm-hmm. I do.
It was Jesse Jackson. And right, Jesse Jackson with, and I think it was Clinton. But the point is, the guy who said it didn't end up winning, didn't end up coming second either,
remember his little rat attack.
Exactly.
We did not elect him. That's right. Exactly right.
Beto's statement about assault rifles, says Henry, while great for applause, is totally unrealistic. He has just given the NRA and Republicans a poster boy and a video to arouse their bases and to represent a stereotype of all Democrats. Would like to see one debate without a live audience, a la Kennedy and Nixon. I did think of that as they were murmuring during the entire affair.
Were they? Was the audience loud?
Yeah. I thought so, more so than in the other debates. But did anyone else notice that?
They're plants. They're plants. There's some audiences. There are some people that are there that are allowed to come in as general honest people who are just coming in. And then there's a lot of people who are plants.
That's so rude, though, isn't it?
I mean, when Castro made his attack,
that was a real response. I don't. I don't mind that, but if you're going to show up, just go and listen.
Yeah, I think that was genuine. I think that there's other people that's like, better just talk, clap.
This is part of the political theater we put on every 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Denise says, saying that Democratic candidates who get in the policy weeds will turn off an increasingly populist electorate flies in the face of midterm election results over and over again all the country. Weedy Democrats beat populist and jingoistic Republican canisters.
No. AOC ran on telling very real stories and not getting into the weeds about the Green New Deal as part of her campaign platform. She was talking about how a lot of working families are struggling to pay the bills. I know that's one example. I don't know all of these other things, but I think that was a big part of it.
You're right. And one of the other things that the 2020 election, I think, is going to either clarify or show was wrong was after the Democrats took the House, the Democrats' narrative was, it's because we were talking about issues and we were talking about health care and things like that. And I'm not sure that that's why. I'm not sure if it was just, reaction to Trump, a reaction to a really bad Republican Congress, and a bunch of really good candidates. I think we'll find out better in 2020 mm-hmm. whether it was truly a policy-based wave or it was just a reactive thing.
But I also think that those races, I think those races are more local, right?
You have to stop talking now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I didn't mean to be the guy.
You
with
have
the last
been a damper on this conversation all morning.
You're a
Joe
downer,
Donahue.
Man.
You and the Economist.
Sorry.
You're bringing
me
down.
Sorry. My thanks to everybody. Keep the letters coming. We'll just fun to read them. Panel at WAMC.org. My thanks to Alan Chartok, David Soares, Rich Onan, Aaron Pacitti, and Rosemary Armeo. Have a beautiful weekend. We'll be back with more show after this.